Continuing our mid-year series of CFO surveys, Federal News Radio's Jason Miller here to talk about the results that we're getting in our Chief Financial Officer's survey today. And our expert guest to talk about those results and give us some analysis is Adam Goldberg, Executive Architect at the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department. Adam, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a description or definition of FIT and what it does and how it fits, no pun intended, inside the Treasury Department.
Sure. FIT, very simply, our mission is to look for efficiencies within the financial management world that can be shared solutions across the different agencies. And those solutions should ultimately reduce the cost of financial management at the agencies as well as improve the data quality of the information itself that agencies are using.
And so while you work at the Treasury Department, you kind of have a gauge or a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the financial management life at agencies across government. Is that fair to say?
It is, yeah. We stay in close contact with all the different agencies, the CFOs, and we involve them in the development of the solutions that we're working on.
So your analysis of the results of this survey will be very valuable for us, and thank you very much for coming in. My colleague Jason Miller here, as I mentioned, to join in the questioning. Jason, take us through quickly the demographics of the survey and who's responding so we have a sense of what those responses might mean.
This is the second time we did this CFO survey. The first time was back in the late December of 2011. The results came up in January 2012. We have those linked up on federalnewsradio.com. But this was, I'll tell you, I was surprised by the response we got. We got about 14 CFOs, deputy CFOs responding. I think that was up from about 7 or 8 from last time. So that's almost double. So it's as I said, we're getting a better response rate. Now, let me go through some of the results real quick. 6 of the CFOs work at a cabinet-level agency, Transportation, VA, as some of the examples we put out there. 5 work at a large agency, such as GSA or EPA, and 2 worked at a small agency. Total, we got 4 CFOs, 8 deputy CFOs, and 1 other what they call senior-level budget finance manager. All of them were career employees, and that really kind of puts a top line so we know who we're talking to. We know we're talking to people who not only manage the money, but are in the high enough level positions to understand how that money is being spent, where it's going, and the concerns that maybe they have about it. The survey itself, we hit upon a bunch of different questions. We talked about sequestration and tech stat sessions, but also priorities. And then also, we always end up with that open-ended question, what should OMB know about the job you do day in and day out? So we got some fascinating responses. Again, we'll have all that posted up later today on federalnewsradio.com, the most recent survey of CFOs.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason. Adam, as you looked at the results of this broadly, we'll get into some of the specifics in just a moment, but as you look at the results more broadly, what jumped out at you? What surprised you? What made you say, I guess is the place to start?
I think the first thing that didn't necessarily come as a surprise for me, but I drew out of this was that the CFOs are really looking to find efficiencies within their agency for improvements. But at the same time, when we talked about efficiencies within financial management, that rated a little bit lower on the scale. So these might be solutions like electronic invoicing or shared services. And to me, what it's showing is that they're looking for efficiencies, but they might not all be within the CFO domain area.
I believe that it's fair to say that pretty much everybody, not just in the financial management community, but in the CXO community and the federal government in general, is thinking, about sequestration. Budget cuts is another one. And so we kind of separated those out in some of our questioning. You're referring to a menu of other questions where we asked the CFOs to rate their top priorities besides sequestration budget cuts. Finding efficiencies ranked first as the number one priority. The second one was hiring and retaining financial management workforce. And that's another one that's not just peculiar to the financial management community and government. Leaders are concerned about keeping in the financial professionals that they have. What are the agencies that are doing it, that are successful in doing it, telling you they're doing to do that? Are you getting a sense of how they're doing it at keeping the people they have?
Well, right now I'm not really getting the sense that they have specific initiatives set aside for retaining their financial management workforce. I think right now they are looking for a little bit more guidance. And what we're trying to do within the Treasury Department is try and find solutions that can help alleviate some of the challenges of the upcoming workforce retirements that we see in the future.
Do you think a lot of those, the efficiency issue, if they're not necessarily looking at shared services, for instance, but they're playing a bigger role in maybe the broader discussion across the agency, whether it's acquisition or IT or program performance? Are you getting the sense that CFOs have always been involved in that, but their involvement is maybe a little different or has been kind of tweaked and because of all the different things that OMB is pushing?
I think because of the different things that OMB is pushing the CFO, my impression is that they are taking a greater role in the larger agency initiatives. And there are a lot of OMB directed initiatives that they're focusing a lot of time on as well, which begins to become a competition for their time because there's the things that they're mandated to do, and then there's the things that they really want to get to, but sometimes their attention is drawn away from that.
Another workforce issue that was on the minds of our respondents is training that workforce, making sure that they're able to execute what it is that they need to execute. Between the second and third slots in our space, 9 of the respondents, almost 75%, responded that was something that was a top priority. Again, given that the budget cuts are one of the first places that gets cut is training, how do you formulate some kind of a response or strategy when it appears that's where some of your money might go away?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges that agencies have is that, you know, training is something that's easy to cut in a budget, but in the long term, it's one of the things that provides a challenge because they're not able to keep their workforce kind of knowledgeable and informed about the things that are priorities within the agencies. You know, I think from anecdotally what I understand, oftentimes in the private sector, the same thing happens, but there is still a desire to continue to invest in that workforce because that is one of the key resources in the organization itself.
We've got to take our first break, but when I come back, I would like to talk to you about demonstrating return on investment. Should be something that people in the financial community are experienced in doing, and we'll get some ideas from you when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Adam Goldberg of the Treasury Department here with my colleague Jason Miller and I talking about the results of our Chief Financial Officer survey, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio. Radio 1500 AM.
Whether you're at work all day, running errands, or away on vacation, why worry about the safety of your home? Trust Ackerman Security to protect your home and family. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I had Ackerman Security protect my home 2 years ago. Now I leave my home with total peace of mind that everything and everyone is safe and secure. I know that Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center is watching my home, not some third-party outsourced company like most alarm companies use. And with Total Connect on my iPhone, I control my system so I stay connected anytime, anywhere. I keep watch with video clips of activity occurring around my home for just a few dollars more.
Experience peace of mind for just $18.95 a month. Call today and get 2 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. That's AckermanSecurity.com.
Let's play a quick game. I say salt. You might say pepper. What about Kaiser Permanente? I'll wait. Still waiting. Did anybody say advanced technology? It's true. We have the world's largest private electronic medical record system. It's how our doctors know instantly if you're overdue for tests or life-saving screenings, which means our members get fast, convenient, high-quality care. What about top doctors? That's true, too. Many of our doctors come from schools such as Harvard, Stanford, and Johns Hopkins, just to name a few. And how about highest ranked? As in J.D. Power and Associates ranked Kaiser Permanente highest in member satisfaction among commercial health plans in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. region 4 years in a row. Of course, if you did say any of those things, then, well, you're probably already a member. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/MidAtlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. For J.D. Power and Associates award information, go to jdpower.com.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi,
I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Fiscal cliff? What fiscal cliff? I'm Emily Kopp. On Wednesday's Federal Drive, we'll talk with a federal contractor who is soaring high despite that precipice. FCI Federal is just one of several contractors filling the Washington Business Journal's list of 50 fastest-growing companies. And a government statement of spending is in the works. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller and I are talking to Adam Goldberg of the Treasury Department about the results of our Chief Financial Officer survey. The results are posted online later today at federalnewsradio.com. And Adam, we mentioned in the last segment that the return on investment question is becoming more and more common in agencies across government and in departments of agencies across government. But one of the things we talked about a little bit during the break is I think when we in the media, and maybe it's true inside agencies, when we focus on the chief financial officer's office and department, we think about them as far as how they distribute the money and strategize distributing money to everybody else. And we lose sight, I think, sometimes of the fact that the CFO is its own office and has its own human resource needs and IT needs and so on and so forth. So talk about demonstrating that return on investment and maybe reminding everybody else at the boardroom table, hey, I've got stuff over here, too, from the CFO's perspective.
Well, yeah. So from the CFO perspective, one, when we looked at the total numbers for the CFO community, one is that there's roughly about an $8 billion spend annually in financial management, 25% of which is roughly IT costs. That supports a workforce of roughly 50,000 people across the federal government. So it's a fairly sizable group of individuals, and you're right. So when we think about the workforce, the financial management workforce, is a very key one within the organization, and trying to meet the future retirement challenges that are coming across, as well as keeping the workforce skilled in what they're doing, is very critical. And we're going to need to have some greater strategies moving forward in order to balance the needs of the organization as well as the needs of the workforce itself.
How are you starting to see agencies building that strategy? Because nobody wants to see budget cuts affect their workforce and their team, and that's understandable. But again, I guess it's back to the ROI question. How can a CFO demonstrate that, you know what, this isn't the place to do it?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm seeing more across the CFO community is greater interest now in shared services. And shared services will be, I think, one of the key ways that the workforce issue will be managed in the future. I think it's really reaching the realization that we can't do everything within the organization itself. And in order to manage the risk of the retirements, I have to look at the possibility of transferring that risk to someone else to assist me.
When you talk about shared services, it reminds me of a couple of conversations that I've had with CFO people and their peers in government recently, and that is things like shared services and will be an opportunity for us in this budget environment that we're in now, not just because of the opportunity to save money, but the opportunity to get people in other parts of the agency who maybe wouldn't have been receptive to doing something like this ordinarily to being receptive to doing things like using shared services. Is that a fair statement, or am I just hearing that kind of anecdotally?
I think it's a fair statement. in terms of kind of heightening the interest level and awareness of others in the organization to shared services and its benefits.
Are there other opportunities like that out there for agencies to work together to realize savings?
Well, I think right now that we have some solutions at Treasury that agencies can look at, as well as, you know, I think there's going to be a greater push in the future to encourage agencies to begin to work together to develop services that might not already exist, or services where they feel the risk is better managed than the alternatives that they have today.
I want to go down the path of some of the shared services your office is working on. But before we go there, one of the questions we asked in our survey was, how has OMB's shared services strategy released in May changed your thinking about moving to a financial management services provider? And the answer was very interesting. When we asked, you know, did it change your mind, 72, almost 73% said no, it didn't change your mind. Almost 20% said yes, it did. And then one person or 9% said not sure. But I think we're talking about two separate types of shared services. And I probably should have written a better question than a shared service provider versus shared services. So are you seeing differences between the idea of moving your entire financial system to one of the, was it four or five government-approved shared service providers, versus maybe something like the Internet Payment Portal, which is a shared service, but not, you're not moving your entire kit and caboodle to somebody else?
I think there's greater interest in what we might call more of a transaction service, like electronic invoicing or centralized receivables, over maybe a full turnover of your entire financial system and operation. We are getting greater interest from agencies on the larger turnover question, but I still think we need to do a little bit more work to help agencies understand how to manage risk in that environment, because we really haven't done something at a cabinet-level department in a turnover situation.
Adam Goldberg of the Treasury Department's our guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller joining me in the questioning. Financial management has been one of the areas, Adam, where historically agencies have been very eager to say, what we do is completely different than what every other agency does, and so we need some unique solution. Are you seeing that finally starting to go away with the advent of shared services and the budget situation and so on and so forth?
I think agencies still continue to use that terminology. You know, we do things different, but we've actually recently started an initiative, what we're calling centralized receivables, which means once an agency establishes a receivable, it'll go to an outsourcer for future processing. And agencies going into this, we did some business process analysis that they actually found a lot of inefficiencies in what they were calling their unique process. And in fact, in the end, most of what all the agencies that we worked with, so there are 9 programs, we found that they were pretty consistent in what activities they actually had to do.
The conversation for a long time in the vendor community has revolved around the 80 or 85% solution, and that is that's the common percentage. Agencies do that much stuff in a very similar way, and it's that 10, 15, 20% that requires customization. Is that starting, as you look at cross-cutting across these agencies, is that a fair assessment on that community's part?
I probably would agree that that's a fair assessment. The question is, of that 15%, is there opportunity to go further in the standardization than what the agencies are able to do today?
Or willing to do, maybe?
Willing to do is a good way to characterize it as well.
Yeah, it's funny because we talk about IT all the time, and I know you're steeped in the technology issues to a certain extent as well, but everyone talks about stop hugging your servers. And I think it's almost the same thing where CFO and budget officers still want to hug their ledger books or hug the system that holds their ledger books, because it's that comfortability. I mean, we talk about culture all the time, and over the last decade, that culture shift is starting to happen. Do you get a sense of how much it's shifted, or are we still in the up stage and we haven't quite hit that plateau yet?
I don't think we've hit the plateau yet. I think also when it comes down to it and you have a call coming in from OMB and you need information immediately, we're all more comfortable with the knowledge that we own the information and that I don't have to go to someone else to ask the question and rely on them to get it to us. So the ability to get to information in the future quickly is going to be an important part of moving to a shared service.
Adam Goldberg of the Treasury Department's our guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're looking at the results of our Chief Financial Officer survey. My colleague Jason Miller and I will continue the conversation with Adam in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
The Digital Strategy directs your agency to deliver information anywhere, anytime, on any device. FIPS Pub 200 and at least three different laws require you to safeguard your systems from fraud abuse and cyber attacks. How do you do all that? CA Technologies provides advanced authentication, privileged user management, and identity access governance, so you can secure online business, prevent fraud, and enable mobility. Find out how CA Technologies helps your agency accelerate, transform, and secure IT at ca.com/public sector.
What's the mission of the National Credit Union Administration? How does it ensure the safety and financial soundness of the country's credit union system? And what can credit unions do to appeal to younger generations? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Debbie Matz, chairman of the NCUA. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's a company-wide commitment by ITT Excels to support our nation's active-duty military, returning service members, veterans, and their families. That's why Excels is launching the Excels Action Corps, an employee volunteer program to serve those who have served us so bravely. Visit ExcelsActionCorps.com to learn more and join Excels employees in your community as volunteers. That's ExcelsActionCorps.com.
The next generation of iPhone is going to support near-field communications. The Android already does. It's a protocol where you can just hold your phone up close to a device at the store, and you can make a payment without even bringing out your credit card. All your credit card information is in your cell phone. You just go there. You see something comes on your cell phone, the dollar amount, and you approve it, and bingo, you pay. So it's going to be the end of credit cards with this near-field communications.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Kids, sports, and weight. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Kids who play a sport or more than just one may be scaling up better in health than those kids sitting in the stands. Researchers at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire surveyed over 1,700 adolescents to see how different forms of physical activity influence their risk of being overweight or obese. Dr. Keith Drake is at the Hood Center for Children and Families at Dartmouth College.
Every additional sports team adolescents played on was associated with a 10% decrease in their risk of overweight, up to three sports. Playing on two sports teams or more was associated with a 39% decrease in adolescents' risk of obesity.
Dr. Drake and his colleagues suggest that high schoolers participate in at least two sports per year. The study in the journal Pediatrics was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
FCA Bethesda's fifth Health IT Day comes October 18th to the Bethesda North Marriott. Hear from more than 25 federal speakers on electronic health records, shared services, big data, mobility, and more. Keynotes from Roger Baker of VA, Tony Trenkle of HHS, and Frank Bateman of HHS. Register today at fciabethesda.org/healthitday. FCA Bethesda thanks its sponsors Adobe, CNSI, Dell Tech, EMC, IBM, KGS, KPMG, National Government Services, and NCI.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, reviewing the results of our Chief Financial Officer survey with Adam Goldberg, Executive Architect at the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department. My colleague Jason Miller is here in the questioning.
Adam, right before break, we started talking about some of the initiatives, and one, you said, new initiative around centralized receivable initiative. Describe what that is, and when you say it's you just started to get into it, what is it going to do, and how many agencies? Give us the lowdown.
Sure. So the centralized receivable initiative basically is an outsource capability whereby an agency would establish a receivable, whether it be for a travel debt or a fine or a penalty that has to be collected. Once that's been established, it would actually send that receivable over to an outsourcer, and they would take over the management of the receivable, so the billings, the notices, the follow-ups that need to take place. this initiative, we're actually estimating at full scale, would save roughly about $300 to $350 million annually through cost reductions as well as increased collections itself. With respect to the interest, right now we're in a pilot stage, so we've recently awarded a contract to an outsourcer. There are 9 agency programs that are going to be participating in the pilot, and the first one will be operational in roughly December, January of this coming year.
Any other timeline data on that, when you expect the pilot to be completed and so forth?
I think the pilot is roughly going to take place over a 2-year period, so we'll gradually be bringing on more programs into that, and then monitoring the increased collections and any savings that's accompanied with it.
And the idea is basically, you say an outsourcer, but basically it's a collections office who, you know, is if you are late on your credit card or you miss a bill and all of a sudden you start getting calls from the collections office, that's the type of outsource. I mean, I know I'm simplifying it, but that's the concept.
Exactly. And this outsourcer has skills and tools that the agencies just don't. And that means they're better able to identify the debtor, go after the debtor in terms of the collection itself, and have greater success in bringing the funds back to the federal government.
Are you talking about, when you say the 9 different programs, are they improper payment type programs, or are they the programs, like, how did you pick the programs? Are you able to give us a little bit of a hint of the types of programs, if you can't name the specific one?
Most of them are administrative costs that are being collected, so maybe a travel debt or some other type of administrative debt that exists at the agencies. There are some that are looking at fees and fines that you'd be collecting from someone external to the federal government. We went around and actually asked agencies who were interested. I believe we spoke to probably about 20, 25 who expressed a good amount of interest, and we narrowed it down to the 9 that would participate in the pilot. We've actually gotten a great amount of interest, and I was a little surprised at the extent of that relative to some of the other things that we've done, but pleasantly surprised at that.
Now, when you tear that interest down, what were the reasons that the interested parties told you they were interested? What was appealing? Was it just the money?
I think part of this is that these are shops within organizations that aren't always resourced as well as they could be and don't have the tools. Also, these are often funds that go back into the general fund, so they're funds that aren't going to the agency and the program itself. So they might not take as great a priority as funds that get collected that go back into a program. So this is going to be that greater opportunity to collect things that we might not have been focusing on as much in the past.
Now, did you have to give them an incentive to say you can keep 10% or 2% of what comes in? And then the other piece of it to the contractor, is this a share in savings? Are they getting paid by what they bring back in?
Initially, there are no kind of share in savings for the agencies in terms of what they bring back in. The contractors actually be paying a fixed rate per transaction. But as we go through the pilot, there might be opportunities to explore the share and savings type idea, and even potentially bring in more competition that could maximize collections.
Because I think one of the things that for instance, Medicare and Medicaid has seen around improper payments, that's a little off topic, is that the idea of a recovery contractor, they're getting paid based on what they bring in, a certain percentage, and that seems to be a pretty good initiative to bring stuff in. Now, I guess the opposite is that sometimes they can get too aggressive, and then you kind of have to find that right balance. Was there a reason why the idea of a share in savings wasn't brought up, or was it? And maybe you guys decided that just didn't make sense right now.
I think initially we didn't really have any data with which to work from, and this pilot will give us more information to analyze and say, hey, might other different types of financing arrangements be better alternatives for us than this kind of transaction-based alternative now?
Adam Goldberg of the Treasury Department is here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It sounds like then this is a pilot in the truest sense of the word, in that you're going to have total flexibility with the structure and so on before you try to ramp it up to other agencies or larger size organizations or whatever.
Correct.
The idea of that scalability, what do you do as you're trying to structure the pilot program or any program in the first place to give yourself that luxury of being able to pivot, maybe even in the middle of the pilot itself, to a different kind of a structure?
Well, I think one thing, by leveraging the private sector in helping us run the program, we do have that ability to scale, because the risk is placed on them to scale up. And they already have an existing operation that they're using with private companies to do this. So that is really I think one of our greatest pieces of leverage or opportunity in this respect.
So this idea of the recovering debts, if you will, is one pilot or one program. You guys at the OFIT are doing a bunch of others. The Internet Payment Portal is one that I've been following. Give us a rundown maybe of some of the other initiatives you guys are going down the path on and maybe a status update.
Well, right now, the electronic invoicing initiative is probably the second kind of, well, the largest savings initiative that we have, which we're estimating at full ramp up, probably about $400 to $450 million saved annually by moving to electronic invoicing. That's been, I think, a little bit more a slow start in terms of getting agencies on board, although the Treasury Department this fall will complete its implementation of all Treasury bureaus, including the Internal Revenue Service, up on this electronic invoicing solution. That's along with the Interior Department. So we have two major cabinet agencies that are stood up on this. As far as other things that we're working on, one of the other areas is within the world of intergovernmental transaction. And this is where two agencies are doing commerce with one another. Yet when we go do the financial reconciliation, we're finding differences. So there's really two opportunities here. One is to improve the financial integrity of the data that we have. And intergovernmental differences is a finding on the government-wide financial statements. So we're really making a lot of headway in terms of improving the policies that go along with that. So one is making the process improvements that are needed. The second part is we've begun to explore some electronic solutions that would make this reconciliation easier. Initially, we had started out in the technology realm, but realized very quickly that we need to fix the process before we apply the technology to it.
You mentioned that the Electronic Invoicing Initiative has met with maybe resistance isn't a fair characterization, but it's been harder to get the agencies on board. When we come back, I want to talk through the cultural appeal that you're able to make. That word comes up over and over again in these conversations about changing the way agencies do business. We've already talked about it a little bit today, and I'd like to dig into that a little bit more when we come back, Adam. Adam Goldberg's the executive architect of the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department, joining me and my colleague Jason Miller as we talk about the results of our Chief Financial Officer's survey. You can find those survey results posted later today at federalnewsradio.com, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
As air travel increases, the world becomes smaller. The modernization of airspace systems is helping to meet this growing demand with greater capacity, safety, and efficiency. Raytheon's world-class technology, training, and industry leadership in U.S. and international airspace management are helping to ensure these important goals are met. Transformation of air travel, it's happening today.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Are small businesses being cheated out of contracting opportunities with federal agencies? For the last 6 years, the government has failed to meet its small business contracting goal. In our special report, The Small Business Dilemma, Federal News Radio examines why this is happening. Some fingers point to the Pentagon, plus advice from agencies that are making a difference in the small business arena. The Small Business Dilemma. Find it this week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on October 24th and 25th for a two-day training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. The training will focus on understanding acquisition policy and the federal market, hear how sequestration, declining budgets, and strategic sourcing may affect what the government buys and how they buy it. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, www.thecgp.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller and I talking to Adam Goldberg, executive architect at the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department. And Adam is here to help us understand the results of our Chief Financial Officer's survey. You can find the survey results at federalnewsradio.com. Adam, we talked a little bit in the last segment about culture and bringing agencies on board to convince them something new is to their benefit. It's been historically difficult to do in government. You mentioned that the electronic invoicing initiative has been a little bit harder to get going than you would like to. What's that selling process like? Selling's maybe not the right term, but the demonstration process like to show an agency it's worth doing things differently than you've been doing them, even in an organization that's as change-averse as federal organizations tend to be.
I think one of the things that we go in with the agencies and show them the electronic invoicing capability, agencies are very interested in it, and we have a lot of repeat discussions with them. But I'm finding that the agencies aren't willing to kind of make that leap from paper automatically to digital information, that there's still an intermediary step they want to take. So there's a lot of agencies that come back and will say, well, does your capability allow me to scan in the paper invoices so that I can have an image to look at? And really the point of electronic invoicing is to digitize the information up front so you could display the information visually on a screen, but you don't need it to be in the image of an actual invoice itself. So again, there's a little bit more hesitation to make the full step to the world of electronic information.
As you prepared the initiative, were you expecting that kind of reaction? Were you planning for that kind of reaction?
Actually, I was really expecting agencies to kind of jump on much quicker in this. The cost up front is fairly low for the Treasury solution, and there's really not a large downstream cost for the agencies. So I really felt that it was, to me, a no-brainer. But again, there's existing operations and practices that are taking place at organizations that would be disruptive, and I think that that's what the CFOs are taking into consideration.
I wonder how much of that resistance comes from the people that you're talking to themselves, and how much of it comes from what they perceive to be resistance from the people that they'll need to be leading further down in their organizations.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a mix of different things, and also when the people that we're talking to communicate up to their leadership, we also don't know what spin they're putting on it at that point either.
When you go before the CFO Council, and you know, is that maybe the reason why the pickup has been slower than expected? Are the CFOs responding with, well, we like it, but, or are they responding how?
Well, a couple things. I think there's agencies that we talk to repeatedly, and that there are also agencies that we talk to about our solutions, but that are also considering other solutions that are available to them that might be part of their enterprise resource planning, their financial system. And what agencies aren't always taking into consideration is that the Treasury solution is actually a service. So it's not just that it's a piece of software, but it comes along with help desk capabilities, outreach to vendors to sign them up, and that when they're looking at a solution that may just be part of their core financial system, they actually have additional costs that are associated with it. But agencies are saying, well, I'm already paying for this with my financial system. I don't want to pay for it again. And that's one of the trade-offs that I think we need to look at further.
Sounds like Danny Werfel needs to issue a memo, but we'll go down a different path there. Let me ask you about the e-invoicing pilot, because you said you've had two agencies, Interior's using it, Treasury's about to be full on. What's the experience of Interior? I mean, are they finding the savings? Are they finding the benefits?
Yeah, my understanding is that the Interior Department is very pleased with the solution. So they brought up the solution at the same time that they were bringing up their new financial system. So they were doing that bureau by bureau. And as each bureau went up live, they went live with the electronic invoicing solution, which is a logical transition for them because there might have been changes anyways that the vendor would be experiencing in the agency. So they make that change all at one time.
Interesting, because we had actually the Interior folks on just in the last 6 months or so talk about that was the FBMS interview, and we'll have to make sure we link that up on to this interview on federalnewsradio.com too.
As you work with these agencies and show them these tools, Jason alluded to the kind of the resistance, we like this, but what usually is the issue that fills in that blank? Is it just we're already doing this in a particular way and it's hard for us to change?
There's that we're doing it this way. There's also the cost. So, you know, where are we going to come up with the money to do this?
Even when it's a low
even when
initial
it's low,
cost, like
and even when
about?
You have a return on investment that can be achieved fairly quickly. So we feel that once you bring on a vendor electronically, that savings is automatic. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have that savings in the future because – or you don't have to have that cost in the future because – they've now got electronic and you don't have someone manually entering the information.
The survey results that we're talking about are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Our chief financial officer survey and my colleague Jason Miller and I talking about them with Adam Goldberg, executive architect in the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
Exploding costs may be a bigger threat to the Navy aircraft carrier program than enemy fire, according to Rear Admiral Thomas Moore. He's the Navy's program executive officer for aircraft carriers. He says industry has to work to cut costs to preserve an 11-vessel fleet. Moore says big deck carriers are here to stay, but cutting the number in the fleet is appealing because the Navy would save on personnel, training, and maintenance costs in addition to construction costs.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's a company-wide commitment by ITT Excellus to support our nation's active duty military, returning service members, veterans, and their families. That's why Excellus is launching the Excellus Action Corps, an employee volunteer program to serve those who have served us so bravely. Visit ExcellusActionCorps.com to learn more and join Excellus employees in your community as volunteers. That's ExcellusActionCorps.com.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. With no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring, I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified, so I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Call today and get 2 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. That's AckermanSecurity.com.
Hey, Ravens fans, join your friends and fellow fans and paint the town purple this season.
Fires over the middle. It's intercepted! Ray Lewis with a pick!
Celebrate Purple Fridays every week by wearing your best purple jersey, shirt, or accessory to school, work, or play on Fridays. For happy hour, head to your favorite Bill Bateman's Bistro for appearances from the cheerleaders. Find the schedule on BaltimoreRavens.com. Show your team spirit and get your purple on.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wrapping up our conversation with Adam Goldberg, executive architect at the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation at the Treasury Department, discussing the results of our Chief Financial Officer Survey. You can read those results and the questions at federalnewsradio.com. And my colleague Jason Miller here joining in the questioning today.
You know, over the last few segments, we've been talking a lot about the initiatives, the e-invoicing and the intra-governmental transactions and the debt collection, for lack of a better word. But all this comes back to this one, the simple thing, data. And we've heard that over the last 4 or 5 years. It's really all about the data. And that's one of the questions we actually asked in our survey. How successful is your agency in using data to make better financial decisions? And it's interesting. We gave them four choices: very successful, somewhat successful, minimally successful, and not successful. And 10 out of the 11 people who answered the question said either very successful or somewhat successful. And there's one person who said not successful at all. I thought that was a fascinating answer because basically they're saying they've made the move to use data to make better decisions. Give me a sense. Is that, I mean, obviously the end result of what you guys are doing with a lot of your initiatives is not just to save money, but to give the CFOs and the budget types the opportunity to make better decisions. What are you seeing from that perspective?
Well, the things that we're working on are to help them make better decisions, but also to help us do financial management more efficiently and effectively. So let me give an example with centralized receivables. One of the problems we have today when debt goes delinquent, it should be transferred to the Treasury Department for collection. What's happening, though, is there's not enough information associated with that receivable for us to successfully do it. So the initiative for centralized receivables that we're working on will actually bring in more information up front. So if that debt does go delinquent, we are equipped with more information, better information to go and collect that. With respect to something like electronic invoicing, that's going to be an area where there'll be a natural progression to what's on sites like USA Spending. Today, USA Spending carries and captures information only about the obligation. The initial purchase that the agency's made doesn't have any information about the spending or the payment that went out. And our ability to do things like electronic invoicing should bring more information to the public quicker and actually better information because we know it's gone through the Treasury system and the Treasury internal controls before it's dispersed out to the recipient.
Some of the other specialty areas in government, subject matter experts have said one of the challenges that we have with this big data avalanche is just figuring out what might be there for us to be able to use it efficiently. Is that the same challenge in the financial management community, or is it different because you're used to dealing with large amounts of data and trying to harness it in a bunch of different ways?
I think the problem would exist regardless of what domain that you're in. There's such a huge amount of information out there. It's very difficult to anticipate what questions anybody's trying to ask. So on the one hand, there's data mining to go after things. The other half of it is responding to questions and really knowing where to look in the information to find the answer.
One thing about data that I think that people look at is how important it is and how important it has become over the last few years. Are there some certain initiatives you guys are taking or certain steps you're taking to reinforce or to say, hey, this initiative is really all about the data versus the technology or the process?
Well, one of the things that we've done recently is gone ahead and revised what are the financial system requirements that agencies are supposed to follow when they go out and buy a financial system. One of the key things that we've done in this area is we've transformed those requirements to be less focused on technology, so what kind of server you use or what kind of operating system you use, and focus more on the information itself. In the revised requirements, we actually label things as data inputs and data outputs, so we know exactly what should be coming into the financial system and exactly what should be coming out. Take that alongside the initiatives like invoicing and receivables, and we really have a nice package that is more data-centric than ever before.
What's the status of that financial systems revision? I remember the old JMFIP, and it was always great because you could always find what the system requirements were, and then there's always the spreadsheet of who was using which type of system. As a journalist doing stories on this stuff, that was great information. Where are we with this latest revision?
With the revision right now, the requirements themselves are in the final stages of being finalized, and the hope is that they are released within the first quarter of this fiscal year, so before the end of the calendar year. Alongside that, we're working on the policy itself, which we're working closely with OMB and beginning to talk a little bit more with the agencies about the policy, with the likelihood is bringing in something we talked about earlier, a greater emphasis on shared services than what we've seen in the last few years.
We're getting close to the end of our conversation, Adam, and thank you very much for participating in this. It's been a tremendous pleasure to have you in the studio. As you reviewed, we talked at the beginning what jumped out at you about the results of this survey. If we went back and asked these questions again in maybe a year or two, are there any that come to the top of your mind that you think we might see a dramatically different result, maybe an initiative that has more time to mature or some particular process that has time to advance or evolve in government that you think we might get something dramatically different?
I think with respect to the question on shared services, I would anticipate that you have a different set of responses if you were to come back in 12 to 18 months than what we're seeing today. I think, again, one, just because of the shared first initiative of the administration, but also within the financial community, just the emphasis that we're placing on this on a day-to-day basis and the importance that it has.
Thank you very much for your insight on this survey. The results posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And Adam, thanks very much for being here today.
Thank you.